This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is sponsored by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Not all franchise companies are built the same. That is, you know, everyone's
just looking
like,
to get money out of you. They don't support you.
They're
not invested in your success.
And that's the thing, you know, just you look at what a franchise is, it's a proven business model that they want to scale. They want to replicate that across the country, across the world, right?
Right.
So you are an extension of their brand. So if you come in with a, you know, blank check, whatever it costs, I'll buy that franchise. But, you know, you are not really willing to follow the system and you're constantly getting sued and you're having all these issues. You're a representation. So yes, yeah. They may have sold you that franchise, but it's going to cost them more in legal fees and or just hurting the brand itself. So they are franchise companies are a lot more selective of who they choose, not just saying you have the money, you know, come on board.
Of course.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Hey everyone, it's Mitch, your host, and welcome to today's show. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview. Welcome to another collaborative episode of the podcast. Today, a good friend of mine, Giuseppe Gramatico from the Franchise Freedom Podcast, joins me to discuss franchising, the advantages of franchising, disadvantages versus a traditional business model. So I hope you enjoy today's podcast. So this is our dual episode, right, of the Accidental Entrepreneur and
the Franchise Freedom Podcast.
Podcast, right. So you need, because franchising does give you freedom. I mean, especially if you don't know what the hell you're doing. So if you're an accidental entrepreneur, franchising is a good way to go because it's like business in a box, right? You don't have those problems. But maybe we could go back a little bit. You talk a little about your background in business. I'll talk a little bit about, you know, my background in business, a little PR for each other. And then we can talk about business, like, you know, what's the difference between a franchise and a non-franchise, why you might choose to franchise, why you might not choose to go with a franchise, that type of stuff. Does that make sense?
That sounds great.
Just kind of winging it. So
this sounds great. So it's our first duel. I like this. So this is great. So backdrop is sunny New Jersey. It's getting cold here. So it's just that backdrop is just making me feel a little bit warmer as I got the long sleeves on today.
But, right. Nice palm trees on Long Beach, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Long Branch, right?
Right.
So my background is kind of like a lot of people. I was a corporate executive trying to figure things out. Prior to that, I worked in the family business. My family owned a restaurant. First generation Italian. So, worked in that family business and as much as I hated it then, working nights and weekends and holidays, best learning experience, best exposure. It's where I got my work ethic. So I thank my parents for that, my family for that. I worked a lot of hours, and then just like everyone else, my parents wanted the best for me, went to college, did well, got my undergrad, got my first corporate job, then got my master's degree. And I hated it. I was, and I'm not saying anything is wrong with,
no, but you're an entrepreneur at heart, you know,
at heart, I guess, just from being in the family business. And I didn't like it. I thought my solution was switching jobs. So I had switched jobs, different departments. And every time I made a change, every time I interviewed, I just wasn't happy. I felt like I was a number. I was making great money at the time, and I just didn't feel fulfilled. So fast forward a few years, did the interview thing, didn't find anything, and started working with a business coach. We figured out that what I was looking for was a business in a box or systems that were already in place. So I wasn't the innovator that wanted to create everything from scratch. I liked that system. So whether it be licensing or franchising. So went the franchising route. Met a franchise consultant along the way, ironically, which is what I do now. Okay. And we explored franchise ownership, business ownership. And I bought invested in my first two franchises back in 2007. And it's been great. You know, it's solved.
You still own those franchises?
Recently sold those this year, actually.
What war was the franchise?
Well, we were in commercial cleaning and maintenance. So, so it was never a business I thought I'd get into, but
that's always the case, right?
Recession resistant. You know, I was an investor at heart. You know, just being in the investment world for so many years, and my father getting me into investments at an early age. So, at least interested in investments at an early age. So, I love that the business you can finish training and just start running. I mean, we got our first account a day after training. I mean, it's amazing how everything is already set up for you. You know, it's never perfect, obviously. Franchising, a lot of work in the beginning, but you know, it's been great. You have it's a business at the end of the day. It's just a structured business, and you know, 2007. So fast forward many years later, and I decided I wanted to become a consultant and help people as well figure out if business ownership was the right fit for them, and if franchising was the right fit. So I love what I do. I get to do it full time and dedicate 110% of my time and effort towards it. And it's been great. So
And so you're basically a business broker and a consultant, but only on the franchise side.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. So my story is similar, but different. And when I was young, my dad's been in sales all of his life, insurance, life and disability insurance and health insurance, things like that. So I grew up in a world where, you know, you don't work for an hourly wage. You work for your results.
Right.
And, you know, I grew up doing everything I could do. I never really had a regular job in the summertime. You know, one time I don't know, you're a little bit younger than me, but there used to be this franchise this chain. I think it was a corporate chain called Kinney's Shoes.
They got bought
by Foot Locker, I think, later on. But anyway, so during the summers, I used to work there. Ironically enough, my father was in the management training program for Kinney's Shoes. And my mom was probably pregnant with me, and he went to get life insurance, met the guy, and was like, I want to learn more about your business. And he never got into Kinney's Shoes. I would have been raised by, what's his name? Al Bundy or something. So, probably just insulted all the shoe salesmen in the world. But either way, so that was like my only job where you would go, right? But after that, I had a detailing company during the summers. I used to make fishing rods and string rackets because I was a tennis player for people. You know, anything I could do to run a business, and didn't really have a lot of business skills. So that's what they told me, right? You go to college. So I went to college, and in college, I got to the end of college. I was just talking to somebody about this the other day, and they're like, well, what made you go to law school? Well, my fraternity brother comes up to me. We were probably drunk at the time. And he says, I'm going to go to law school. And I said, okay, I'll go to law school too. I had no idea what I was going to do. I was finishing up. I wasn't in an MBA program. I really didn't same with you. I really didn't see myself going in the MBA route, working in corporate America. I was more of a, you know, small business owner at heart, entrepreneur, although I don't even think I knew what the word entrepreneur meant at that point. But of course, 2 weeks later, my friend sobered up and he's like, I'm not going to law school. And then I was like, well, should I go? Did I like do that just because he said that? Or do I want to do this? And my wife's half Italian and half Jewish. So my Jewish grandmother is prodding and poking me all the time. You got to go to law school. If there's anything you do, you be learn the law, this and that. So, and so I didn't know what the hell else I was going to do. I applied to, you know, all these law schools. I got into a school in the city that actually offered me money because my dad was like, listen, I got to take care of your sister. Like, you know, good luck. Right. And my grandmother gave me some money and I went in law school. And then very early on, I realized I liked tax and I liked business and I liked all that type of stuff. So when I got out, never really worked for, I mean, I've clerked with some judges and worked for some firms, spent some time at the IRS and whatever, but I've always been kind of on my own. You know, I was in-house counsel for some financial companies, but then had a law practice on the side doing wills and trusts and estates and business things because all these agents needed work done for their clients.
Right.
You know, so over time I learned about all the business planning and forming a company. And, you know, I've over the years reviewed franchise agreements and help people purchase franchise. Matter of fact, I think, was it Russ Miller that connected us originally?
Yes. Yeah.
So Russ brings me a lot of businesses, and one of them one of my networking groups, owns a Pure Clean franchise now. And I had helped her purchase it probably around 2007, 2008. So, so that's kind of what my background is. And I'm more of a business owner at heart, business person than I am a lawyer. I just,
right.
You know, like I'm not going to do a podcast about law. That's boring. Nobody's going to, we touch on legal topics. Like we'll touch on it today.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, I want to interview people and hear about, that's why I was excited for the two of us to talk and collaborate because we're dealing with all kinds of, you know, different kind of people with all kinds of different level of skills. And that's why I find that franchising, it's not for everyone,
right?
But it definitely pushes the envelope in the skills area. As long as you're dealing with, you know, I think the most important part about buying a franchise is the franchisor. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of a system do they have? Are they supportive of their franchisees? I've seen people buying the franchises and I'm thinking, I would never have bought into this. So they got six locations and you never hear from them, but people get talked into, obviously they don't deal with guys like you. They're doing it on their own. They get talked into all kinds of stuff.
Right.
You know? I don't know what your experience has been on that side.
Yeah, it's franchising. I don't call it an industry. It's a business structure. And if there's a, you know, mom and pop business, a non-franchise business, there's always a franchise counterpart. There's always, you know, a franchise that's doing that. And
right.
4,000 franchises, I think, in the U.S. alone, plus a lot of franchisees. And, you know, yeah, it's not, you know, I have a book, Franchise Freedom, a podcast, Franchise Freedom. I am not, I love franchising. It's what I do, but it's absolutely not the right fit for everyone. You know, the person I always ask, do you want to build your business from the ground up or do you want to run with a successful business model? Which one appeals to you? And if you're like, well, I want the business set up, but I want to create the product or the service and I want to do it this way and not that way. It's like buying a McDonald's franchise and
trying to change everything. Yeah, right. It's not going to work for you. You got to follow the company line, right?
And those are red flags. The franchisor will just say, hey, you know, they're interviewing you just like you're interviewing them. They will stop that process really, really quick. So it's not the right fit. And to your point, not all franchise companies are built the same. Everyone
just
is
looking
like,
to get money out of you. They don't support you.
They're
not invested in your success.
And that's the thing, you know, just... You look at what a franchise is, it's a proven business model that they want to scale. They want to replicate that across the country, across the world, right?
Right.
So you are an extension of their brand. So if you come in with a, you know, blank check, whatever it costs, I'll buy that franchise. But, you know, you are not really willing to follow the system and you're constantly getting sued and you're having all these issues. You're a representation. So, yes. Yeah. They may have sold you that franchise, but it's going to cost them more in legal fees and or just hurting the brand itself. So they are franchise companies are a lot more selective of who they choose, not just saying you have the money, you know, come on board.
Of course.
And, you know, we pre-screen and we work with about 165 franchise companies that have been around. They're not just fly by night. They've been around. Franchisees are happy. The company's growing. They support their franchisees. But to your point, they're not all built the same. There are franchise companies where, you know, there's a lot of support in the beginning, but you don't get the ongoing support. So you know, one, and there's a lot of benefits to franchising, but I say one of the, if I had to pick one of the major, major things is when you're looking at a franchise, we're going to work together, figure out, you know, what's best for you. We're going to look at two or three companies. You're going to have the ability to talk to, you know, 50, 100, thousands, depending on the size of the franchise, what we call validation, existing franchisees throughout the system, and get their feedback and say, hey, Mitch, you know, you've been doing this for a year. Was the investment in line? Would you do it all over again? I call that the $1 million question, knowing what you know now.
Right.
Do it all over.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have that huge group to validate. And then if you do become that franchisee, you're going to the same group, which I call kind of a mastermind for.
The best ones I know like their franchisees, and they interact with their franchisees, and they share ideas, and they're always supporting each other. That's important.
Because it helps. It helps with feedback on improving the brand, with growing the brand. They want referrals from their franchisees. Everyone's happy. So a lot of benefits, but you got to pick the right franchise. And it all starts with figuring out, you know, people are shocked. You got to do it in reverse order. Don't look at a franchise and, you know, you start going down that rabbit hole. I like just to give an example, Subway, nothing against Subway. And then you start going down the rabbit hole. I think it's great. I think I have the money to find out it's not a right fit for you, and or you, there's no territory available. So reverse it and look at if business ownership is the right fit, if franchising is the right fit. And then we go down a whole process as far as, you know, what's your ideal work week look like? What's your skill sets? What's your role in the business? If you're keeping a job and doing this on the side, how many hours can you put towards? What kind of money do you want to make? And we put those characteristics together, and, you know, by narrowing that down, we look at two or three companies that kind of match what you're looking for, as opposed to, I like Subway because I like their food. Now can I customize and change up what I'm looking for in a business to make Subway match what I'm looking for. That's a recipe for failure.
Definitely.
In my opinion.
Well, I can't imagine how someone, and I know they do it on their own, but how you can go and consider or evaluate franchise opportunities without somebody like you who's got the kind of experience. I mean, most of the things you just said, people won't even, they don't know the questions to ask.
And guess what?
To them. You know, I talk to people all the time. Well, you're selling your franchise. Well, we didn't do this. Well, did you ask?
Right.
No, we didn't ask, you know.
And I didn't know either. Full disclosure. I did the exact same thing that everyone I work with does.
You didn't have a broker when you bought?
I did have a consultant, but prior to that consultant, I started contacting franchise companies directly, and I started going down the rabbit hole. I started looking at food because that's what everyone thinks of.
Right.
As I mentioned, every industry has some type of franchise. So I, you know, my information that I give, we you know, the podcast, the book that we have a webinar that we do, it's all free. It lays out exactly how to pick out your franchise.
Right.
And if you would like to work with someone like myself, we are similar to an executive recruiter. So there's no fee for a service. So why not work with someone like myself?
Yeah, you get paid by the franchisor for placing.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. No, I mean, that's just a no brainer, right? So like, look, do you want to make this really hard on yourself? It's going to be hard to own a business anyway. So how much harder do you want to make this up? Do you want to eliminate some of the possible, you know, pitfalls or the mistakes you make by dealing with a professional who has had the experience and has reviewed 150 plus franchises and has seen bad things and good things and knows the weeds and the flags and the red marks that you won't even see? I mean, look, I did as a business attorney too. People come to me all the time. And, you know, if I create contracts for them, I review people's documents all the time. Right.
Right.
And I can tell right away whether it was drafted by an attorney or at very least was taken off the internet and doctored up somehow. Cause there's things missing that if you got 28 years of experience doing this, that there's things that I see that that are not, you know, I immediately look for, cause I know what happens, why you're writing these agreements, what you have to address. People just think agreements are like, oh, we love each other and this is great and this is going to be the way we're going to do business. They don't put anything like, well, what if we aren't going to do business anymore? What if we're breaking up? Well, you know, how do we split up the franchises? Well, we're going to need the franchisor's permission, you know, all that type of stuff. Who owns the intellectual property from that particular business? And you know, it's, and a lot of it with franchisors, I understand, because I've sold some of them too. You kind of need their cooperation to do it. You can't just sell the location. You got to have their approval.
Yes. Yeah. You have to get approval. You know, meaning they may have to interview, because it's just like a brand new franchise. So
right.
To your point, you know, I've owned a few franchises myself, and you know, you talk about the legal, and yes, you know, when looking at a franchise, you definitely want, number one, an attorney reviewing that agreement as well. And right. These are, in many cases, cookie cutter. They're laid out the same.
Right. And the bigger the franchise, the less likely they're going to change that agreement.
Correct. Yeah. It's, you know, you get, you know, there are, and I have to watch what I say, but there's always potential for negotiation. You know, if it's a newer franchise, or, you know, maybe they give you a right of refusal. You know, you want to buy one location.
And, right.
You don't want to buy two up front, but you want to be given 30 days, so some type of right of first refusal. But, you know, and this is not, and this isn't a knock on the franchise I invested in, because I'm not aware of, you know, the franchisors aren't going to get into really deep as far as all the legal aspects once you invest in the franchise. But, right. You know, figuring out, you know, someone like yourself to help especially a first time business owner, what is the appropriate legal entity to set up in the event, you know, something happens, I get hit by a bus, you know, who is going to, you know, what's the successor plan? Who's going to run the business? Who's going to own the business? Two separate things.
Now, doesn't
right?
the franchisor want to know those things? Like, do you have a plan in place if you get hit by a bus tomorrow? What's going to happen, or not always?
They should. I would say not always. Not in, I was given the advice afterwards. But I can't speak for every franchise company, but you would think they would want to know that.
It would
right?
be something important, right?
They can't get a hold of you because, you know, you got hit by a bus.
And yeah, your biggest operator dies tomorrow, and you're right. Like, what the hell do we do now?
What do we do? So I guess if you can talk about, because the questions that I get are, you know, after we, and so fast forward, someone invests in a franchise.
Right.
What do I, you know, it's not about, okay, do I need a will? Do I need a successor? They're just spitting off stuff that they kind of read off LegalZoom or one of these websites. What does someone truly need in place? Kind of what is there a package? Is there a list of items that someone should have in place? Especially, I mean, maybe they should have some of this prior, but especially after investing in their first business or investing in a business.
Yeah, I mean, and that's one of the things I like about franchises, in that it forces you, in most cases, the franchisor wants a business plan and yeah. You know, those kind of things in writing. And a lot of people skip that step when they're not forced to do it.
Right.
They think they have it's in their head, but their head doesn't work properly. So let's split it into two parts, right? Let's split it into a guy who buys a franchise and it's just him, no partners, right? So he probably needs less business documentation. He most likely has an LLC, a corporation already set up, because the franchisor required it, right?
Right.
And assuming he met any obligations he has under the franchise agreement from insurance purposes and indemnifications and liabilities, let's assume he's done that. He probably can get away with, he probably needs an operating agreement because he's probably borrowing money, right? Most of those guys aren't just walking in with cash. They don't need a bank loan or anything like that. So that's probably the first thing they needed. It's kind of funny to have an operating agreement with yourself, but you know, the banks have checklists that they want to check off anyway.
Right.
If you have a partner, or you know, an operating partner and an investment partner, you definitely need an operating agreement. You're going to probably need a buy-sell agreement that talks about if you die, if you become disabled, if you want to walk away, you know, who has rights to what. You may at some point want to get an agreement with the franchisor, so they're signing off on that ahead of time and saying, sure, we don't have a problem. If you want, you know, Giuseppe to run the thing, if you die, we don't have a problem with that, you know, ahead of time. So you don't have arguments of death with the franchisor. You definitely want to have certain agreements with your employees for not stealing your business or your customers. You know, you're a franchise, and the advantage of a franchise is that people don't necessarily compete with you. So you want to make sure that the employees kind of adhere to the fact that you're under an agreement with a franchisor and you have certain obligations that they don't. If you're, Subway's a good example, right? So you and I could go open a deli down the street. We could start making sandwiches. So somebody could do that. So you want to make sure that if they're going to do that, they do it no closer than 5 miles or something. I don't know. Those kind of things. And then on the personal side, you definitely as a business owner need to address your estate plan.
Right.
And estate plan doesn't mean you're worth $100 million and you know, there's charities involved and grandchildren and all kinds of trusts. It means that you have made provisions in your will for the proper disposition of your assets, including your business.
Right.
And I do this Thursday morning, like live stream at 10:30. And yesterday I spoke, ironically, I spoke about the differences between your will controlling your property and other, let's call them beneficiary designations, titling of property and other agreements. So if you have a business agreement with your partner and it says, listen, when I die, my estate will sell my share to you and I'll get cash. My wife will have cash or whatever. If I change that in my will not be controlling.
Right.
And I very often see, and I very often see estate plans where they never took the next step to check the titling of, you know, maybe the guys buy a franchise, but they also buy the building that the franchise is going to be in. And the building is in what, and they don't, you know, cover all their bases. And then their wills are conflicting with the agreement that they have between each other is going to control. So the wife might be like, I want to own the building. It's a good building. I want to get income from it. Well, no, I have this agreement that says I am entitled to buy you out. We had a life insurance policy and here's the money. Go away.
Right.
So you want to make sure that those things are all coordinated because it leads to estate conflicts and contests, you know, in court.
Let me interrupt for a second. So just I'm going into business with my brother-in-law, my brother, a handshake doesn't work, I is what you're saying? And I'm saying that I
wouldn't give you
answer.
Legal advice. I wouldn't give you legal advice that it works. I mean, you can do whatever the hell you want. I'll tell you something, Giuseppe, I get into more situations where, like you said, it's your cousin, it's your brother-in-law, whatever. Maybe the dad had the business originally, you took him over, right? So the dad bought like one franchise location. Now he's got 50. So the boys are taking over the thing, right? It always leads to conflicts. Because what happens is if you don't have, you know, like an agreement in writing, these are the rules, these are what your obligation are, my obligation, our job, this is what happens. 9 times out of 10, the other sibling ends up like riding on your coattails. And they're like, well, what do I need to do? I'm still getting 50% of the money out of the business. I don't, you know, and then it leads to animosity. And the other person says, I'm really the president. Well, how are you the president? Well, he knows I'm the president. I call myself the president.
Right. Okay,
but what does your agreement say? Well, we don't have an agreement because we're family. And it's a really, really bad way, you know, to do business. And I talk about this. I give this speech called How to Get Sued by Anyone and Everyone. It's not about getting sued. It's about avoiding getting sued.
Right.
But a large part of it, I'm writing a book with the same title with a guy, a friend of mine. A large part of it is memory and how our minds work. I know this is off the franchise topic, but it is on the business planning topic, right? Our mind, our brains do not work the way the law wants our brains to work. The way business dealings want our brains to work, right?
Right.
Everyone who's dealing with you in business, and if you're in a deposition or you're on the stand in a lawsuit or you're arguing with somebody, right? We go on the supposition that everybody's mind is perfect. And if you're not agreeing with me, you're lying.
Right.
And that's totally so far from the truth. It shouldn't even, like, there shouldn't be testimony in court because you will always discredit testimony because it's very easy to confuse people. So what happens with, it's not my wife. So what happens with your memory, right? So you and I we buy this franchise, right? And then 3 years later, we buy another franchise. Then we buy another location, open another location. Then we have a regional manager and all these things. And we don't have it all in writing. We've been dealing with each other. I remember certain things. You remember certain things. You're talking to people. I'm talking to people. We have a box in our head, right? Everything gets stuffed in the box. And then when you want to find, you're looking for something. You're going through the box. It's not a file cabinet that's all organized.
Right.
So you're pulling things out of the box. But the problem is that things get in the box that aren't yours. They're your experiences that I somehow in my mind believe they're mine, right? So nothing that we're going to deal with is going to be accurate 100%. What you believe is what you believe as the truth. What I believe is the truth. They always said there's you and me, and then the in-between is the truth.
Right.
That's because we never remember anything. So if you don't, you know, put things in writing, and if you're buying a franchise and you're putting down $50, $100, $1 million to open a location, you better get your big boy pants on. You're not, right. This isn't like a joke. So you're putting money on the line. So that means you got to, you know, be organized and cross your I's and dot your T's. And it's not like, yeah, I need to get around to that. No, you need to do it now.
Right.
When everything's happy and people are healthy and there's not issues and, mm-hmm. and that's the biggest problem. So all that stuff needs to be properly coordinated. And that's why a bunch of text messages and emails over a period of years doesn't make a contract because it doesn't exclude other things that we might have talked about. You know, that you're like, well, what were we talking about a month ago? And I go, what do you mean? What are we talking about a month ago? You said, right. Well, you said this and this. I didn't say that because I don't remember it. It's not right. that I'm like lying to you. So, and family situations are the worst. I mean, it's, and I would say probably in franchise business very often, right? You have somebody buying in, maybe the spouse is working with them. They got the kids, the cousins are working there. And that's very common in those types of businesses,
right.
But you have to be, have it in writing. And look, I know that people that do franchising that go into franchises as franchisees, very often they don't have the kind of business skills or well, they certainly don't have the, whatever it, they don't have it in them to start from scratch. There's a lot to do with that. Right. Mm-hmm. But they generally don't have a lot of business skills. And that's why they're attracted to the franchise model. That's not completely true. I know some people that have tremendous business skills and they're right. executives and they left their company they were with and they're like, well, we're going to start a business. Then, and then they're like, why the hell should we do that? This company's doing it and they're killing it. Let's join them. And they know what they're doing and they really do well.
Right.
But a lot of people get started and, you know, they don't, you know, they think they can open a pizza shop and just make pizzas and throw them out the window and people are going to buy them. And it's just not that easy. So
the E-Myth Revisited, Michael Gerber talks about that. So that's a pretty, it's a perfect example. You know, I'm a plumber. So let me start a plumbing, you know, business around plumbing and it's a disaster. They've never hired employees. Right. They don't know how to return phone calls. There's no websites.
So yeah. Yeah, I mean, they can fix a pipe.
That's
but the business side of it, forget it.
Yeah, and we talk, and I talk to people in various trades that want to, because we have franchises, and
of course,
plumbing, and it's like, well, do you really? Your role is going to be different. You're going to be doing less of the plumbing and more of the overseeing. And what do you know about marketing? And you don't have to be an expert. The franchise company will train you, but. Are you willing to do marketing and hiring and firing and all the other stuff and deal with the legal and the insurance and all the other stuff that you didn't have to deal with when you were, you know, working for another company? So
very different. Look, law is the same way. Most lawyers have no business skills. If it was allowable, I'm sure there would be a legal franchise, but you really can't do that. Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be lawyers and form.
Right.
You know, legal practices or whatever, but yeah, business, but lawyers have no business skills. I'm probably going to put together a video online course, you know, podcasting for professionals.
Right.
Because I always say that if you're a lawyer, for example, you should spend 80% of your time doing, you know, content marketing and business development, 20% of your time squeezing in the work, because what it'll force you to do, first of all, is offload the things that you really shouldn't be doing anyway.
Right.
And you never have a dip in your cash flow in your business because right. you're always trying to squeeze in the work and always working on business development. Then you can hire somebody to do the work. But most attorneys don't do that. That's just a whole yo-yo thing. If they even do marketing.
Right. Exactly. Right. And they kind of wait for on referrals basically.
Yeah, they go hang out with their buddies and you're a IP attorney and I'm a whatever business attorney. So we pass clients back and forth or whatever, but it's like feast or famine.
Right. And it's very specialized. I know some just do one thing and one thing only.
Yeah.
You know, copywriting and trademarking and or just estate planning and that's it. So
right, right. Exactly. And they go, and I'm specialized too. I do business in estates.
Right.
And I want to work with certain people, but I do get work from other attorneys, but that's not my primary focus when it comes to marketing and business development. I'm not going to the bar association meetings, hanging in a room of other attorneys.
Right.
I do it sometimes. And I do have attorneys I get business from because I use them for clients. And I do trademarks here and there, but I'm not an IP attorney. If it's involved, I send it to colleagues of mine. Certainly if it's patents, copyrights, all that type of stuff. There's a lot of rules around that stuff that you need to know. So I don't do that stuff. And they send me, then none of those guys do any of the general business work.
Right.
So they're like, well, you do the general business. So it's good, but it's not the sole way to build your business. It's not enough.
Right. I agree.
Got to be. That's why we do the podcasting and stuff. It's all content marketing.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSite Marketing,
the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSite. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSite and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
I agree. That's all we do. We do the podcast. You know, we have different guests, all different industries. It's not just about franchising. It's career transition, career pivoting. I mean, couldn't I pick a better topic with what's going on in the world? So, you know, people that have went from employee, they think the grass is greener becoming a business owner, which it may be.
But it's hard work.
It's hard work. So right. I always say this, and I stole this from one of my fellow consultants, but no one ever wants a business. They need a business. You know, right. A business is a lot of work. It is, you know, franchise or not.
I'm leaving 9 to 5 and I'm going to have freedom being a good luck. Well, you're going to be free, but you're going to be working 80 hours a week.
Well, I always say in the beginning, right. I mean, the hours, especially in the beginning, are going to be a lot. So depending how the business is set up and what the business is, you know, the business doesn't rely on you day to day.
But that comes with planning and developing your systems and putting your personnel in place and not feeling like you got to do everything yourself.
The system, and you know, one thing I learned, quickly in my first business was you have to find the key employees. You know, what are the right questions? How do you find those employees? Because those employees are the lifeblood of the business. So,
people it could ruin the business too. I had a friend who had one of the earlier ice cream, you know, frozen yogurt franchises. I think it was
quite
TCBY. Is TCBY still around?
I don't even know.
Yeah, but it was like Froyo, whatever.
Right.
And I think they were in the city and they had a manager who was like the cousin of somebody they knew. So they thought they trusted this, stole from the business, and they can never recover after that because of the money that he stole.
Right.
So it's definitely hard. Do you have anything that pops in your mind, any stories that you could share? You don't have to be specific, like, well, the Johnsons bought.
Right.
Yeah. Anything like that, that we can share with people that are valuable experiences? I probably
I guess with experiences, the big concern is, so a lot of the people that contact me have a job. So it's one of those deals where they may not have a job in a few months, given the pandemic and COVID and all that other stuff. And so they want to keep the job for as long as they can. So we call that semi-absentee. You keep the job. Maybe you put in 10, 15, 20 hours a week, a little bit more in the beginning, but that's going forward, 10 to 20 hours, we'll say. And, so the concern that comes up, and there's various examples and stories, is what if I'm at my job and my general manager, my key employee leaves, you know, what do I do? And that's with the assumption that you need a general manager. There are, and I don't want to give specific names, but there are certain brands around health and wellness that there is no general manager. There are 4 key employees. They're all highly trained through the franchise company. One is giving a management title, but everyone is trained in the same way. So in the event one person leaves, your business is fine. Doesn't miss a beat. You know, you always have kind of a waiting list of employees that you want to, that maybe you interviewed in the past that you're looking to potentially hire. So it's a concern. You know, the manager leaves, the main employee leaves. So many franchises what they do is either there is no manager, but in the cases, especially in the gym space, there is that general manager in place. The second in command is trained just like the GM. So in the event that general manager leaves, you have the backup.
Right.
And you've been trained on it. The second in command has been trained on it. So yes, it's a disruption to the business, but it's not like, oh my God, my business can't function now. What do I do? So they put those things in place. You know, they have a train the trainer program in the event, you know, you are looking to hire other people. So
yeah, no, that's important. I think one of the biggest problems is businesses that become dependent on one or two key people. And then those people can, especially if you don't have any agreements with them, they can hold you hostage and said, listen, me and Giuseppe know how to run this business. You're worthless without us. We're going to go down the street and start our own business. And it happens where, you're getting competition.
So to your point, you talk on the legal aspect, you always want to have those non-competes with a radius, right? Which, yes, that's a whole nother probably conversation, how they're enforced and things like that. But you want to have certain safeguards in place. But,
make sure that your business, if you decide, if you were our key person, right?
Right.
And you said, listen, Mitch, my mind cracked. I'm taking a month off.
Right.
And I'm going to be on that island behind you.
Right.
And you can't call me. Still operate? Would you be running around like with your hair on fire? And can you equip your business to be able to do that?
Right.
You know, that's like a good exercise. If you had a key employee and you could afford it, you said, tell the key employee, listen, we're giving you a month off. We're going to pay you, but we're giving you a month off. You got 2 weeks before you're leaving.
Right.
You tell everybody what they need to do and equip them and teach them your job, different parts, and then go away for a month. Enjoy yourself, relax, and then come back. Let's see how we did. Right. And I know businesses that have done that, and the person who thinks they're going to lose their job really ends up moving up in management, and then they're the president of the company. Right. But it's an exercise probably that a lot of businesses don't go through because you don't.
Right. It's like you don't expect it. For it. Right. Yeah. You're not planning for it. And to that point, and that's part of the value that I kind of bring to the table is when someone's asking those questions, I go, these are the specific questions we're going to ask the franchisor, right? We're going to ask them in the event my GM leaves, what is the training protocol? Because some will say, yeah, you can run it semi-absentee, but we don't have a program necessary to train that manager on the side.
Right.
Let's get everyone trained in the same ways. Let's incentivize, with certain, health and beauty franchises, there's incentives to upsell. The latest trend, and this is also to take away less burden from the franchisee, franchise companies, especially larger ones, they're going through, they're setting up call centers, in-house call centers. So for lead gen, but also for customer care. So if a customer calls in and says, I want, mosquito spraying, can you give me additional info? They'll give the info. They can upsell them on the first spraying right on the call and take payment. And not only that, follow up for the next spray. And by the way, we offer tick spraying services and things like that.
Right.
So we're taking
that. Yeah, valuable to that.
Yeah.
Value to that.
You don't have to, instead of having that in-house, because what happens? You and I probably do the same thing and everyone listening. You Google, just to be consistent, mosquito spraying. You call the number. They don't pick up. What do? Google
the
search.
Next one.
Go to the next one.
Exactly.
You don't leave that voicemail.
No, of course you leave a voicemail. I don't leave voicemails.
So
I don't even leave voicemails for friends. I text them. I hang up
and I
send them a text. it's funny. I go to Crunch, the gym, which I think is a franchise.
Yes.
So I called the other day, and I'm not afraid to say this online. So I'm not ready to go back, to go and work out. So I see that I get charged this month, whatever the $11 or something. And I called them up and I said, listen, I want to, freeze my membership. I'm not ready to come back. I'm not coming. Okay, that's fine, sir. You just need to come in to sign some forms. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's the whole point.
The whole point, right. Exactly. I don't want to come in.
Email me something. No, we don't do that. Well, I'm not done with them. So I'll be calling the franchisor and I'll be calling the manager and telling them that, listen, unless you want this attorney to come into your place and sign the paperwork and then tell everyone what your business practices are, I think you may want to accommodate me a little bit.
Yeah, that's given what's going on. I think they can accommodate, make the exceptions. But that's the reality. People are doing stuff at home and these gyms are doing a lot of the gyms that are charging a much higher amount, which have the personal trainers and things like that, they're
virtual
doing virtual stuff and training. And to be honest, they're doing twice as much more. You're getting twice the amount of calls and trainings and stuff like that included in the membership. But to your point,
they got to survive, right?
They have to survive. Yeah,
those guys pivoted pretty well. The whole industry went online.
They're doing stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're, you know, with COVID-20, people are going to have to start losing weight. And I can tell you this, when people are looking at, we get calls all the time, people looking at location just in retail in general, they are the discounts and what they're, you know, willing to lease spaces for is just extraordinary.
They're afraid. Right. You said COVID-20, like you're already anticipating the next virus to come.
Right. Right.
You know,
so it's, it's brick and mortar, retail, things like that. You know, I know people get concerned, but I always tell everyone, by the time we speak, by the time you sign that agreement, we're looking at 6 to 12 months out before you find a location and open.
You got to build it out, the whole thing, negotiate your lease. Yeah.
Yeah. So the rates and deals they're giving have just been phenomenal. So I always tell everyone, don't forget why you started looking at business ownership. I mean, there's always going to be something. I mean, obviously this is an extreme. There's always going to be something that comes up, you know, it's hurricane season. It's this, it's that, it's, you know, we're going into a recession. It's, you know, I started my business 07, 08. We went into a recession. We thrived because we stuck at it. It wasn't easy. And we did well. We did well for ourselves. We were in a business that was recession resistant, recession.
Well, you know, I think that should be part of people's consideration. I mean, they say, well, is this business recession proof or whatever? I think going forward, people are going to look at things and say, well, what do I do if something like this happens again and the government says you got to be shut down? How can I pivot? What kind of product do I have? Can I sell it online? Can I do this? Can I sell it on a street corner? Whatever it happens. And I think that's going to be part of the decision-making process. It certainly should be part of the business planning process. Resiliency. There should be a resiliency, you know, chapter because, I mean, there's some businesses that have just gotten hammered. Now, I guess a lot of the food franchises are more either casual, fast food, and they were already doing deliveries. So they jumped right on DoorDash, Grubhub, and it's the local restaurants that are really were hard to, you know, and there some did were. A very good job of it and some are just closing.
And I talked to, these are smaller mom and pop and friends, and they're thinking about, do I even open up my dining room again? You know, I kind of like this model. The problem is I have this lease that I'm paying. Do I go to a smaller location and just do takeout and not have to, you know, scale it down a little bit, not have to, you know, deal with the dining end of it, look at their margins and things like that. So there are people reconsidering and there's, you know, it's not the end all be all. It's kind of like when you start your first business or your first franchise, and maybe you wanted something in food, but you end up with something in employment services or porta potty franchises. I mean, there's literally a franchise and everything. It literally in every industry. And yes, the answer to your question, yes. But that's
no
not the end all
be
all.
That's a shitty job.
Yeah, it's a shitty job. Well, I was in the commercial cleaning business, and that was not an easy business either. That is something we have lots of stories on, but that's another show. That's the after hours show.
Right.
But, you know, it's just because you start in one business doesn't mean you have to expand that business. That business may be doing well. And then you go back and in a year or two, maybe you look at something in food, maybe something in health and beauty or, you know, wellness or stuff like that. So the options are endless. I just tell everyone, you know, before going in this endeavor, figure out your skill set, put together a little resume, see what you've accomplished, what you've done. What do you see your role being in the business? You know, after putting all that stuff together, you know, making sure an attorney reviews everything. And then to your point, going back to COVID, when you're validating, when you're speaking with franchisees, ask them, what has the franchisor done for you? There are, you know, companies in health and wellness that started selling food, you know, and delivery type services and things like that. So what has the company done? There are even in the fitness industry, not to give specific names, where the franchisor said, we're going to convert our entire building of 200 plus, whatever the number is, employees. And we are going to call every franchisee. Everyone's going to be assigned the franchisee. We're going to speak with and work with the landlords and negotiate leases on behalf of the franchisees. That's unheard of.
Unheard of. That's smart. So smart.
And had, you know, because they said, okay, let's slow down. We still want to bring on new franchisees, but let's slow down a little bit and let's figure out how do we keep these guys in business.
Right.
Selling gift cards.
Plus the franchisor has more clout.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, so, they're the gorilla.
Right. They say, okay, well, we have so many brands, we have 2,000 locations across. In many cases, one landlord may have been working with 50 franchise owners because they have, you know, 50 different franchise owners and locations. How do we work together? We're not looking here to say we don't want to pay you anymore, but we need to stay in business. We're hurting.
Right. People us going out of business doesn't help you. Right.
Right. So there are the few. So ask those questions. And I'm not, you know, it is the job of the person investigating the franchise to do it, but I coach them in list and we go through every question they should be asking. You know, these are the red flags. You should be asking this. If you're not getting answers, if they're not getting back to you, guess what? Move on to the next.
Right. Right. So yeah. No, I think it's all now, do you find that the franchisors very often want development people that are not just going to open? Because a lot of franchises I've looked at for clients, you don't make a lot of money opening one location. I'm sure there's exceptions to that, but it generally seems that if you're going to open an ice cream franchise, you need two or three of them to make a living. Because at the end of the day, with your staff and your rent, you know, maybe it's throwing off $30,000 to $50,000 a location. So if you want to make some money. So first of all, is that true? Is my evaluation correct? Maybe it's wrong. And also, is that very often what the franchisors are looking for? They're looking for development deals?
Some are, not all, but okay. There, I know I could think of a handful right now that are looking and they say, you know, our minimum is two or three locations or territories.
Right.
You know what the franchisor, the big secret is they want, you know, qualified people coming in that will follow the system, that have the skill set. So if you need to be a leader and, you know, the job is hiring lots of employees, they want to make sure you have that skill set, but they would prefer you. Maybe you don't do it from the very beginning, but buying one franchise and buying additional territory. And the secret is if you buy additional territory, so if I buy two additional territories versus them selling two brand new franchises, they may make less on the fees I'm paying on those two additional, but I'm already an established person that's credible, that follows the system. So they prefer that.
Right.
So they don't say it's mandatory, but there are a handful that do want two or three. And, you know, it goes back to what you're looking for. They'll say, what kind of money are you making? I'm making 200 grand a year. I need to keep that level for my lifestyle. And they'll say, well, there's an earnings claim, you know, that they call, not everyone lists it in the franchise disclosure document. And they'll just say, this isn't a guarantee. This is what the average sometimes first year person makes, the third year, 5 year,
right,
put on the list. And they'll say, you know, it, on average, given a semi absentee, because you're hiring that manager, you know, someone's walking away with 100,000, you know, you may want to look at two locations.
Right.
So it's not a guarantee, but this is our recommendation. So do you have that capability? And when you do look at additional territories, you typically get a discount on the second. So you may get a discount on the second franchise license, but if it's service-based, you still may not need an additional office. It's just a bigger territory that you're working with. So, I always lay it out as to what it looks like and making sure they hit their goals, but they're going to speak directly with the franchisor as well as the franchisees, because when they valid, they'll say, you know, what did you realistically make your first year? Can I make 100,000 per territory? You know, if I get two, is it realistic?
Right.
Ask a dozen franchisees and see if you get the same answer.
Now you deal with new franchisees, right? You don't do resales. Russ does more resales than you, or you do both?
We do both. Okay. It's primarily, I would say 95% is brand new, but on an occasion when I do a territory check. So if you come to me and say, I'm looking at just whatever the town is, I'm looking at Morristown, New Jersey. And I say, well, this is a really good fit for you, but there's already a franchise in there, but they are willing to sell or they have recently listed. That's when I bring the resale to the table.
Got it.
So I'm more important for me. It's more important to find the right franchise companies. And then we look at to see if there's resales available. And that's a little bit more complicated because now you're investigating a franchise and you're also investigating the books of the existing franchisee. And that's where there's going to be a lot more legal review, because now you're reviewing the FDD and you're reviewing, all the legal
diligence
and setup.
That's a little bit more involved. Are the larger franchises like Dunkin' Donuts, McDonald's, Wendy's, all this stuff, are they pretty much saturated? You're only buying, there's only resales, or is there, like, I would think that all the territories are taken. Like if I go somewhere and there's no Dunkin' Donuts, I just think to myself, well, somebody must own the franchise rights. Right. They just haven't developed a franchise yet.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. We don't work specifically with those companies. They're always looking to develop and look at carving smaller markets on occasion. But to your point, yes, sometimes you'll get, you know, large deals. They'll buy 10 locations and then develop one location a year. That's a typical development schedule. So I always say, you know, those are the first ones people think of. But, you know, when we looked at your plan and you told me you didn't want to, you know, have a lot of turnover in employees, a lot of minimum wage workers, we're like, hey, you know, I had someone look at a food franchise or come in looking at a food franchise, and he got into water and smoke mitigation. One has nothing to do with the other, but yeah, he realized like, wow, this matches what I'm looking for. And, you know, I don't have to deal with the lower margin, high food cost turnover and things like that, and building this massive location, you know, which is going to bring my investment level through the roof. So
yeah, exactly. Well, look, I think that on the we'll call it regular business side, the non-franchise business side of the world, you know, I think that there's a lot of ways to make mistakes, and you don't have places to, I mean, you could do your market research, but you're not really asking somebody apples to apples what their experience has been, how much have they made. You know, the only factor there is really your location and maybe some factors of the guy who's running the business. But it's not like, well, let me ask the clothing store down the street, because I'm thinking opening a clothing store. That doesn't mean it's the same.
Right.
So I think that it does give business owners a big advantage if they do their due diligence and they, you know, and they work with a professional over, you know, businesses that are not franchises. You know,
most, I mean, never get up and running. You know, they start looking, I want to start this. So I'm going to start my business plan. I'm going to create the logo. There's a high, I don't know the exact number, and I don't think we would ever know, but it's pretty high that the business never launches.
Oh, it's like 50% in 2 years and 80% in 5 years.
That's assuming they even launch. These are people that
right.
just start
of course.
The plan.
That,
right?
And that doesn't include the ones that flounder.
Right. 20 years I've been yeah. working on this business plan, and it's just like,
There was a person nearby. I think she had been a teacher and she retired, and she opened like, I guess, 3 or 4 Subway franchises. Mm-hmm. They must have been available because they were Subway. So she bought existing franchises. I think there were 2 that were operational, and she opened 2 more.
Right.
One of the town centers was being rebuilt, one by the highway. Mm-hmm. None of them are there anymore. Because I don't think she was a business person, you know. She was absentee. She had people working for her. It was near one of my old offices. We used to go in for sandwiches all the time. It was right. Subway, I believe. And, you know, you can go in a restaurant and get a feel for if they're selling enough sandwiches to pay the rent or not, you know.
And yeah, you can visit, right? You can visit. They'll be more than glad to talk to you if they're even there. But yeah, I always encourage people, walk in, visit your local. If you're looking at a specific franchise like a Dunkin' Donuts, go talk, go see if you can speak with the local owner. And that's,
yeah, you have a lot of franchisees who are not absentee, but they're not on the shop floor working, right?
Correct. Yeah, and it's not always the case, but it's just you know, it's just who I've been attracting. I don't know, through the podcast, but a lot of people I'm keeping my job and I'm in this industry. But and I always tell people, even if you're an employee, you know, a franchise or a business could also be a safety net, because given the, you know, the times we're in, you never know when you can lose your job. You know, why not create that safety net where it could be run semi-absentee instead of that, you know, we call it a side hustle, you know, and just have something on the side. So in the event you do lose your job, you're not worrying about unemployment, what it's going to look like and this and that. You have that business that can assist you. So
now there are franchises that are, you don't need brick and mortar, right? I mean, there's,
that's what drives the investment up. But there's a lot of home-based service where you go directly to the homeowner. It could be insulation spraying, employment services to water and smoke mitigation. Absolutely. And then you have the brick and mortar. So the brick and mortar are going to be a bigger investment. The you know, service base, you're going to have a big territory, can work from home, but you're going to have much, much lower investment. And the investment has there's no correlation between investment and returns.
No,
you can have a $50,000, $100,000 home-based business or a McDonald's franchise. One has nothing to do with the other. You know, the McDonald's maybe it's less hands-on. You have a GM and people just come to your location because everyone knows McDonald's versus the home base. but it has, it does not make a difference. Absolutely. As far as the return you'll make on the business.
Okay. Well, I think it's a good, I think this was good. This is our first collaborative episode, and I'll have to get it edited and do a, you know, special release in a couple of weeks. I don't know about you. I think I can turn around a couple of weeks.
Video is going to be new for me, so I'm going to hit you up after this call.
Well, the video, I just do it raw like this. Yeah. It's going to go right up to the cloud. Cool. And you know, I don't do StreamYard or any of that stuff. At some point, right, maybe I will, but, yeah, but, yeah, the audio, I do more editing, and then we can put it out. But I think if anybody is listening, let's hope people are listening and they're either in business or looking to be in business, they should reach out to my law practice. They should reach out to you.
Absolutely.
And we'll put all of our contact information in the show notes, because if you're looking to buy and start your own business, you definitely should research the franchise side of it, because there may be exactly out there what you're looking to do with the systems in place, with the experience in place, with the support in place to reduce your chance of failure.
Right.
I'll save
you the hell of a lot of time, because, you know, there's only so much time in the day, so we can cut through it, deal with the most important thing, you know, if it's right for me to begin with. And then once we get to that stage, you end up buying your business, let's get all the legal paperwork together, because that is one area where I have a ton of nightmare stories of people, father passing away or some, you know, a sibling passing away. Nothing is put down on paper. And that's one thing I want to help people with. So I talk about my story. Not that anything bad happened to me, but I did this stuff later on. You know, I didn't have certain things set up in the very beginning. So
right,
to avoid that and for peace of mind, and you can, you know, speak with Mitch and he can lay it all out to you. Instead of me asking for the specific things I need, just say, this is the package I recommend. These are the five things you should set up now. Maybe in a year you should do these, you know, next five things. So
right. All right. That I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
This was good. All right. So let's all say goodbye.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Thanks for everyone listening in, and we'll talk soon.
This was great.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.